This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Hey, thanks for being with us again. Mike Russell along with Dr. Mike O'Neill. Today's topic, guns, guns, guns. Columbine, Tucson, Aurora, Sandy Hook. Do we need gun control legislation? Is it time? This week's Think Tank, we'll hear from Hilde Saizo. She's a criminologist, an advocate for gun safety legislation, and president of the Arizona Guns for Safety. Todd Ratner is going to join us. He's a board member of the NRA, so I think it goes without saying which side of the aisle he's standing on. Professor Richard M. McCleary is going to join us. He's a professor of criminology, law and society, environmental health sciences. How about that for a card? That I don't even know if you can fit that on one card, Doc.
UC Irvine. That's a very odd way of chopping up
just,
the world.
Yeah, he just works at UC Irvine. He's the stat guy. He's going to keep the stat you hear, the claims you hear. He's going to keep both sides on. He's going to play referee for us, if you will. And then Dr. Mike and I, we will wrap it up at the end. You are going to get a flavor of exactly what Dr. Mike O'Neill does and how it pertains to gun safety.
Mike O'Neill here, and welcome, Hilde. You are the president of Arizona Chapter for Gun Safety. Earlier today, we were talking on the phone, and you outlined for me some items pertaining to what the president's plan is to deal with gun violence. And I wonder if you might run through those proposals and how your organization feels about each of those.
Okay, well, thank you for having me here today to discuss this very important issue. I was involved in helping to put together this plan to reduce gun violence. I had input through the Vice President's Task Force on Gun Violence. And I think the President's plan that he presented in January is a good one. It's comprehensive. It looks at a number of solutions that taken together could really impact gun violence and save lives in the long run.
Tell us about what some of those elements are.
Okay, so some of them do involve congressional action, such as universal background checks, banning assault weapons, banning high-capacity magazines, instituting a new federal gun trafficking law, all very important actions to take. But there's also a number of other actions that the president proposed that are important as well, and they don't require congressional action, so we're already starting to implement those. Things like giving additional resources to the ATF to oversee and regulate the gun selling industry, getting a leader for ATF, which we haven't had in years and years. And so there's a direction for moving to more heavily regulate the gun selling industry. But there's also research that's very important, so that the CDC is actually providing resources for important research into how do we address gun violence? You know, what works, what doesn't work, and understand better what the problem is so that we can come up with more effective solutions. But there's also looking at mental health. How do we identify individuals that have mental health issues that can potentially be dangerous? How do we connect those to the resources that are available for helping those individuals? And how do we keep guns out of those individuals' hands? Also with young people, very important, whether it's in the school environment or dropouts or, you know, young people in that very critical age of 18 to 24 that are typically the more crime-prone age or violence-prone age group. How do we connect those people that have issues with the resources out there so they don't end up in that situation of committing violence or having access to weapons? And so I think there's lots of ways in which we could reduce violence, that we could have an impact on this problem of gun violence, and that we can save lives.
Now, how do you respond? The predictable response from the other side is going to be that owning a gun is a sacred American right, and if you restrict that, you've trampled on the Constitution.
Well, you know, I say that 31,000 people die every year in America from gun violence. At least 66,000 people are injured, many who have to deal with lifelong health impacts. It's costly to families, to our healthcare system, to communities. Very, very costly problem. But none of the solutions that are on the table would in any way impact sports shooters from hunting, you know, from sports shooting, from individuals who own a handgun and protecting their households. So I think there is a middle ground that people can legitimately do those things they want to do, such as hunting, sports shooting, protection of their themselves, their family, and their households. But we could also have a much higher degree of safety in our society. And it depends on where we put our priorities. And I think those victims and those survivors of those 31,000 gun deaths every year, those 66,000 injuries, they would say they deserve the attention and the priority too. And so we have to start implementing that middle ground.
You cite some very compelling statistics, but what I think the gun control folks, your side has never adequately dealt with is the issue of people's fear. And what gets conjured up in these arguments typically is a singular picture. There's a drug crazed lunatic, and he's trying to break into your house. And at that moment, do you want a gun in the house? That, I think, is the fear that the gun control advocates have never really wrestled with. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think that the decision of having a gun in your household is a personal one, whether you feel you need personal protection. But I think you have to understand then the impact and the ramifications. You know, if you have children living in that household, if you have depressed individuals in that household, then you have to treat that gun differently because it could be used for the wrong purposes. It can be accidents involved, teenagers getting access to guns we have to be very careful of, suicides we have to prevent. Thefts of guns from households are a big problem and a big pipeline to getting guns into the hands of criminals. So I think there's also research that tells us oftentimes if somebody tries to defend themselves with a gun, they more often end up getting injured than those that don't have a gun in their hand when they're a victim.
One more question. This issue just went before Congress in the most minimalist kind of way, which is background checks, an issue in which you have 90% of the population agreeing with your position, 88% of gun owners agree with that position, and it lost again in Congress. Why?
Well, I certainly think there's a disconnect between the citizens of our nation and our lawmakers, number one. But number two, we have a very strong gun lobby. A gun lobby that has an enormous amount of power that they shouldn't have. A special interest should never be able to control a topic like this. But that gun lobby is very much resourced by gun manufacturers, which have sort of an endless supply of resources, obviously. So what we have to do is we have to show our lawmakers, the people who are developing policy for our nation, we have to say the citizens of our nation are fed up. And they need to start listening to what we're saying. And I think the nature and tone of the debate is changing, and it just takes a little bit of time, but I believe we are getting there.
And that's Hilde Saizo. Thank you so much for joining us. She is the president of Arizona for Gun Safety. Thank you once again. We appreciate it. When we come back, we're going to hear from the other side of the coin. Todd Rathner will join us. He is a board member of the NRA and a lobbyist right here in the great state of Arizona. Don't go away. We'll be right back. It's The Think Tank.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Welcome back. Mike Russell along with Dr. Mike O'Neill. We want to thank Hilde Saizo for stopping by. She's the president of Arizona for Gun Safety. Joining us now is Todd Rathner. He is a lobbyist and a board member of the National Rifle Association. Todd, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Welcome, Todd. Before you came on, I asked our previous guest a question about a hypothetical incident that I think describes the reason why the NRA wins most of their battles, and that's the issue of people's fear. The image that I presented her with was that of a drug-crazed lunatic who's trying to break into your house, and I asked her, don't you want a gun under those circumstances? I have a parallel question for you. We're not in home now, we're in a school setting, and a crazed gunman enters into your kid's school or my kid's school. And in the next 10 seconds, he's going to empty out his magazine full of bullets on those kids. How many bullets do you want that person to be able to have in their magazine?
Well, the question really is more about how many bullets do I want to have in my magazine? Because they can carry multiple guns. They can carry multiple magazines. You can switch out a magazine in a matter of milliseconds with just the minimum of training. You know, and the question really is how many cartridges do I want in my magazine? And the answer is as many as it takes to put that guy down. That's the bottom line.
Down in Tucson, wasn't that fellow finally wrestled to the ground when he was trying to switch magazines from the first to the second?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's what they say. We don't know exactly what happened, but that's what they say. If that's true, then it's a matter of luck. I mean, look, these people are, the people that do these things are insane. They don't necessarily train, but, you know, you do have them that go in with multiple firearms. You know, the Aurora, Colorado shooter had multiple firearms. All of these guys are out of their minds. And if there's a chance that, you know, you can wrestle somebody to the ground when they switch a magazine, great. But I would much rather be in a position where I can have as many cartridges in my gun as I need to put down somebody like that, period.
What you've suggested would seem to suggest that you ought to be in favor of background checks. You've indicated these people are mentally unstable. So somebody with a habit of mental instability wants to buy a gun at a gun show.
Yeah.
Shouldn't there be a check?
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, I am in favor of background checks. I'm in favor of a good background check system that actually functions, that actually works, and that actually has the mentally defective people in the system. And the problem is that for years...
Is that the NRA's position?
Yeah, that is the NRA's position. It's always been the NRA's position. We support background checks that work. We've always had that position.
Now, here's the thing I always wondered about background checks. If you have background checks required for gun dealers, then people go to gun shows. If you require background checks at a gun show and somebody can't get a gun that way, they're going to Craigslist. So how does that work unless you have background checks for any gun sale?
Okay. Is it your understanding that there are no background checks at gun shows?
No, I'm saying that if there's a loophole anywhere in the system where somebody can buy a gun without a background check, if there's any vehicle for them to get a gun without a check, that's where they're going if they get closed out.
Well, let's make clear that more than 90% of the guns that are sold at gun shows are subject to a background check because they are sold by federally licensed firearms dealers who are required by federal law to conduct a background check.
But I'm worried about the less than 1% that are deranged.
You know, the problem is enforcement. If we have a background check system that requires every single gun sale or gun transfer, no matter who it's between, to have a background check, then the only way to enforce it is to have complete registration of all firearms. That's the only way to enforce it. Why? Because if I'm going to sell you a gun, the only way they know that it's left my ownership and gone into your ownership, if we meet at my house or we meet somewhere else, and I transfer the gun to you, the only way that the government can know who the gun belongs to and who and when a transfer occurs, if there's complete registration of all firearms. And in every single case where there's been complete registration of firearms, there has been confiscation. And that we don't support it. The NRA and gun owners in general don't support registration. That's why the bill failed in the U.S. Senate, because gun owners do not support registration. They support background checks that are run properly, that are run well, but they're not going to support registration. And that is a bigger fear than any kind of scenario you come up with for anything else, because registration has always led to confiscation.
What if if you're afraid of registration, what if I simply required, if I'm going to have a private sale of a gun, you have to go into a registered gun dealer and complete transaction?
First of all, how would you enforce that? How would the federal government enforce that when I sell you a gun, we don't do the background check? I've known you for 20 years. You're my neighbor. You live down the block from me for 20 years. And you say, hey, I want to buy your 870 shotgun. And I say, okay, it's $300. And you give me the $300, I give you the shotgun. How does the federal government enforce that law against that transaction?
The way we enforce any law, it's illegal. And if you do it and you get caught, there's a sanction.
But the problem is that it's, you're not going to get caught because I've known you for 20 years and we do the transfer and it's over with. You know, the only way to enforce it is registration, period.
But whether I catch that instance, the neighbor of 20 years, I'm not really concerned about that. I'm concerned about the creep that calls you up out of the blue, saw an ad on Craigslist or somewhere, and may not be mentally unstable. And presumably you don't know that guy.
Well, and, you know, and out of the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of firearms transfers that occur without a background check all over this country all the time, we have, one lunatic, one mentally defective person out of all of them. And furthermore, let's look at you know, all of the recent mass casualty shootings. In all of the recent mass casualty shootings that have occurred, there's been a background check on someone. And a background check and having this law that's going to inconvenience me and every other law-abiding gun owner in this country, having this law in place is not going to do anything to stop those people. They were subject to background checks. Jared Lochner was subject to a background check. Adam Lanza's mother was subject to a background check, but he stole her guns. I mean, this whole background check thing is used by folks as a panacea when it's not. You know, it may stop some folks, and that's fine. You know, we're okay with that.
Well,
but, you know,
if background checks, is it real quickly on the end here? If that's not the answer, we've got 31,000 gun deaths this year. How do we cut down on that number?
Well, look, we do it through education and information. We try to get people to understand, you know, what you know, how to use guns, what they are. And instead of making them this horrible totem that the left has made them into, that you shouldn't see a gun, you shouldn't touch a gun, you can't even wear a T-shirt with a gun on it or the teacher's going to send you home and all of that nonsense. Years and years ago, when we had a more agrarian rural society, when people had guns for hunting and they had them around the house for utility purposes, we didn't have these things going on because we had exposure and we had education. And that's what we need. We need kids to learn how to shoot. We need them to understand that they're dangerous, and we need them to understand that, you know, that there are consequences to their actions, and not to ignore it and put our heads in the ground and pretend like if we just ignore it, it'll all go away.
Todd Rathner.
And the other thing, we also have a broken mental health system in this country, and that needs to be fixed.
And that does need to be addressed. And Todd Rathner, we are up against a hard break. I appreciate you stopping by. Todd Rathner of the NRA, enjoy your time out there in Texas. Thank you so much for taking time away from that to join us right here on the Think Tank. When we come back, it is the referee's turn. We have the stat man joining us, Professor Richard McCleary from the University of California, Irvine. He'll be joining us next on the Think Tank.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
I want to thank Hildy Sizo from Arizona for gun safety and Todd Rathner from the NRA for joining us now. We have had a fly on the wall. We have had we've had a referee of sorts listening on the sidelines to both of our interviews. And here to make sense of all of the numbers that have been thrown at us is Professor Richard McCleary from the University of California, Irvine. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Hopefully you heard what has transpired so far.
Yes. Yeah.
I wonder if you could react to that.
Well, I haven't heard a lot of things that involve numbers.
Well, 31,000 dead from gun violence, 61,000 gun violent injury were the first stats that I wrote down.
Well, those are correct. The gun deaths, the gun fatalities are largely suicides. The rest really are homicides and very, very few gun accidents. That's correct. And that's been going down, but it's still a relatively large
number. Let me address that specifically. The question of gun suicides, the counter argument raised is, well, those people who killed themselves with a gun, if they didn't have access to a gun, they would have killed themselves some other way anyway. What's the evidence on that?
That's probably not at all correct. If you look at suicides, anytime you close off an avenue of suicides, you will find a decreased risk of suicide. So, for example, in Britain during the 1960s, the government eliminated toxic cooking gas, changed the type of gas used to cook, and you saw a reduction in suicide coincident with that. So if you can make it a little bit more difficult to commit a suicide, all of the evidence shows that it will go down. The gun issue is probably the best studies that I've seen have been done by a physician named Art Kellerman, who's now at Rand Corporation, but he had been for a very, very long time at Emory University in the Centers for Disease Control. Having a gun in your house increases the risk of suicide by as much as a factor of six. So people with handguns in their homes, for example, are six times more likely to die of a suicide. When you look at the other side of it, the number of instances where where someone breaks into a house and is confronted by a resident.
And that's the classic fear situation that I alluded to earlier.
You're in your home, somebody's breaking in, and you feel defenseless. How common is that?
That's extremely rare. Of course, we don't have national statistics that look at that, but again, a study by Kellerman. Kellerman's one of the major figures in this area. Looked at home invasion burglaries. That is a break into a home where someone is at home, where someone is present. Looked at 200 consecutive home invasion burglaries in Atlanta and found only three instances where there was any type of resistance offered at all, three out of the 200. In those instances, the people were injured. There were only three instances where a gun was used, and it's not entirely clear whether the intruder brought a gun in or whether the homeowner used a gun. But in one of those three instances, the only thing stolen in the break-in burglary was the owner's gun. So they're extremely rare, and if one looks at all of the numbers, it appears that being surprised, a homeowner really wouldn't have an advantage to use a gun. So to answer your story, they're extremely rare. But again, you know, fear, we often fear things the most when they're extremely low risk or low probability.
Kind of like the same reason we're white knuckled on an airplane, but relatively fearless about driving around in our own neighborhood.
Yeah. That's a very good, very good analogy. Very, very good analogy.
One of the few things I can think of that amounts to the equivalent of a social experiment that was done on a large basis was the Australian gun buyback program. You're familiar with that?
Yes. Yeah. The Aussie gun buyback program actually was done at the federal level, and it was in response to a mass murder similar to what we saw in Newtown, Connecticut earlier this year. And the government bought back 600,000 weapons in all of Australia.
And this is in a country a fraction of the size of this, so proportionally to the extrapolate to the U.S., it's way bigger than that. This is big.
Yeah, it would probably be something on the order of buying back 15 million weapons in the U.S. when you also would have to extrapolate the per capita gun ownership. The effects there show relatively modest effects, but effects nonetheless, decreases in homicides, especially homicides involving a gun. Decreases in suicides, especially suicides involving a gun. Decreases in violent crimes, especially those involving a gun. And, of course, the big thing, I don't know if you want to make too much of this, but there haven't been any more mass murders with firearms in Australia since that time. That was 1996. But I want to emphasize the effects are in Australia are still modest. They're real effects, but they're modest. Part of that is due to the fact that most of the guns that were bought back tended to be what economists call low-risk weapons. A lot of military guns, a lot of long guns, so on and so forth, and relatively fewer of the types of guns that are used in crimes and suicide.
Those would be more handguns.
Yes, yeah. So many of these gun control laws that we see in the United States are so relatively weak in what they do. They're so watered down that we shouldn't expect to see effects. Nevertheless, one does see effects.
Interesting, the comment about the type of weapon. I wonder if are we missing the boat then if we focus on things like assault weapons as opposed to handguns?
Actually, handguns probably are all assault weapons one reads about in the newspapers in these spectacular Newtown, Connecticut-like incidents involve semi-automatic long guns and smoothbore semi-automatics, but handguns are really the high-risk weapon, as the economists say.
So how would you characterize the overall drift, then, of research in this area? What do we really know about gun violence and what the most effective things that we could do to reduce that would be? What do we know?
Well, I think it's fairly clear from all of the research that the prevalence of guns and gun ownership is really a major factor in all of this. And any sort of intervention that would affect that or impact that would have some sort of effect. The argument would
let me translate that to English. I think you're saying the more guns, the more problems.
More guns, the more problems, despite the fact that there's a relatively well-known book called More Guns, Less Crime. The fact of the matter is more guns, more gun crime, quite obviously. The other thing I think that one has to look at is that in the United States, it is relatively easy for people who have no legal right to get guns to purchase them. Internet, gun shows, gun show loopholes, that sort of thing. It's an open question because there has been no research as to whether one could write and implement enforce a law that would require background checks in such a way that these guns would not be going into the hands of street gangs and criminal.
Right, and that is what the issue is just keeping the guns out of the wrong people's hands. Professor Richard McCleary, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for reffing for us and bringing in some truth to the stats. We appreciate it. Up next, Dr. Mike O'Neill's Time to Shine. If you haven't gotten a read on Dr. Mike O'Neill yet, oh, you're about to. We're about to find out the area in which he shines, and that is your opinion, public opinion, polling and stats, coming up next right here on The Think Tank.
You're listening to The Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
Just an amazing show. Hildy Sizo joined us, president of Arizona for Gun Safety. Todd Ratner from the NRA joined us as well, and Professor Richard McCleary from the University of California, Irvine. My old stomping grounds, by the way, Orange County, California. Laid back people out there. It's time. It's your turn, Doc. You are up and ready to go. I want to know just a quick summation of the last three guests that we've had. What did you hear that really stood out? What did you hear that you think, yep, that's exactly the way things are going?
You know, this issue has been around for a long time, and I don't see a whole lot of movement. I mean, the nature of the arguments that are raised have been relatively consistent. There are a lot of gun deaths in this country. There are a lot more gun deaths in this country proportionally than almost anywhere else. There are, as a result, we do kind of react to the wrong things in a way. The most horrific things is 31,000 gun deaths a year, every year. Really, that's worse than Columbine or all these other things which just grab you in the heart. But it's a couple of dozen people, couple of dozen kids. Horrific thing.
Right.
But 31,000 a year, that's 100. That's the equivalent of one of those types of events every single day. So that's why the issue keeps on coming back. And the NRA has been traditionally about the most effective lobby in Washington. They breathe fear into Congress. And that's what you saw in the last week. You had an issue background checks that was favored by 90% of the public, by 88% of gun owners, and they were able to squash it. However, after this last incident, there has been some movement that might be a crack in that state of affairs, in that it operates, basically, the NRA lets you know if you don't vote their way on issues they considered to be critical, they'll come and they'll get you. And they have a very effective track record for doing it. Well, in the last week, about a half a dozen senators who came down on the NRA side of this issue saw huge drops in their public approval. Our own Senator Jeff Flake, whose approval figures are all of a sudden in the 30s, and here's a guy who just won an election in this state. Kelly Ayotte dropped by 15 points. Rob Portman of Ohio, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, they all dropped about 15 points. Several other senators dropped, but in single digits. This could ultimately be a game changer if all of a sudden senators and congressmen say, well, there's a risk for sticking with the IRA or the NRA as well as a risk of opposing it. It might be a more balanced situation.
All right. Now, I want to get to the those numbers for a minute, because this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Right here. This is right in your wheelhouse. 90% of Americans, 88% of gun owners. I will argue, and I would bet the kids' college tuition on this one. We could not get 90% of America to agree the sun will rise tomorrow or the earth revolves around the sun. Where does this 90% come from? Because once 90% was thrown out, I rolled my eyes.
Well, any survey question like that comes from the response to a particular question.
Okay.
And this question is something along the lines of, should we have some means of keeping people who are mentally disturbed or criminal or whatever from getting a weapon? And the instinctive reaction is that makes a great deal of sense.
Sure.
Now, you can reconstruct that question with certain details and move those numbers. You always can. But that still is that's an impressive number. That says that the idea of having background checks before people can buy a gun is a very instinctively appealing number.
Okay, so they took the question. Do you want to keep guns out of the wrong people's hands?
In effect,
saying everyone supports background checks instead of here's the background check legislation. Are you for or against this?
It devils in the details,
right.
And you could construct it differently. But this wasn't just one. I saw about half a dozen surveys mm-hmm. on this with modified questions. It says the idea of background checks is. And it whether it's 90 or 89 or 87, it's overwhelmingly supported, okay?
Right.
What I found, I think the more telling point, however, is all these senators, a lot of them, took a really bad hit for their vote. What we don't know is whether that is a momentary flash in the pan.
Right.
People are ticked off this week, but they forget it in 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Or whether that's something that has legs and sticks with them
sure.
and becomes a professional political liability. If the latter happens, that could be a game changer. If all of a sudden people have to be afraid on both sides of the issue, on up to this point, politicians in Washington have feared the wrath of the NRA.
Sure.
And particularly in red states, that's been a sine qua non. You don't get elected without an NRA rating.
Now, let me ask you this. Has the question been asked or has the survey been brought up that do you think background checks would have stopped a Sandy Hook, would have stopped Aurora, would any of this legislation stopped what we see as, like
no,
you said, those crises, those big ones that we get behind?
That's a tough question, because basically the lay of the land in this is that you have a whole lot of proposals. And our first guest laid out a whole lot of proposals, mm-hmm. a comprehensive plan for dealing with this. And a lot of those are very, very objectionable to the NRA and to, you know, hardcore Second Amendment adherents. And as you start whittling away what you do and you only live with what you can get, you run the risk that what little you can get is not very likely to be effective. And Dick
right.
McCleary said that mm-hmm. as well. He's saying, you know, we only do a little bit, tink around a little bit here. And then we say, well, how come that doesn't solve the whole issue? Well, because the realm of politics being the realm of the possible, we were only permitted to do just a little bit.
Sure.
We did just a little bit and it had almost no effect. So, you know, how much are you willing to do? For example, the more dramatic effect, and even that wasn't you know, absolutely overwhelming, was the level of buybacks in Australia. That was a big program, had a, I think he described it in more modest terms, but it was a very measurable effect.
And it was shocking what he said. He said that the majority were what we call, what Senator Feinstein runs out in front of the cameras as assault weapons. He was talking about long guns.
And the interesting thing is Australia had a very similar culture to the United States.
Okay.
This is a frontier country where people had an attachment to their guns.
Sure.
And they had the equivalent of a Sandy Hook. And on a national level, that country got together and said, we have to not have this happen again. And we're willing to curtail our rights to some extent over that. It wasn't like doing this in a Belgium or France.
Right.
Okay? It was
right.
a country, a frontier country that is in many respects a lot like the U.S.
Sure.
And they did it, and they had some of
it. Yeah, but it was surprising to me that the types of guns that were being handed in
I saw some of those
long
pictures.
Guns, and
yeah,
it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It was definitely amazing. What can be done? Let's just look. When we talk about things whittled down to the lowest common denominator, let's try that. Let's try to get that passed. Right. Is there anything in Congress? Because I think that's the fear. The fear, Doctor, is that for normal people like myself, the masses. We don't trust the people writing the legislation. That's where the fear comes from, more than a guy running into my house. The fear is somebody writing this legislation.
There's one thing I would take on, I suppose, and I do this as a committed researcher. There was some research years ago done by the Centers for Disease Control that showed the impact of guns. The NRA objected to the results of that research and was able to lobby Congress to get a law passed to prevent the Center for Disease Control for conducting research on gun violence. I think that's, to me, is a kind of a don't confuse me with the facts kind of position. I think that's one thing. If you can't do something in the area of background checks that has the widest public support on almost any issue I've ever seen, you can't do anything. I don't know that. Beyond that, you're going to get a whole lot.
Well, don't let it be said the think tank does not take on the tough issues of the day. Gun control, we'll take it head on any day of the week. Dr. Mike O'Neill, Mike Russell, thanks for spending time with us right here in the think tank.